This is an ABC podcast.
Nisan Bolivinaka and good fella morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. We proudly bring Pacific Beat to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. Well, today is D-Day. That's right, Solomon Islanders will take to the polls and we'll be getting the latest updates live from the island nation. Yes, our reporters Evan Wasuka and Chris Narita Almanu Leong will join us shortly. And once our stories are online, that's your opportunity to give your feedback at abc.net.au/Pacific. And remember to like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram via ABC Pacific. I'm your host, Aggie Tupou, and this is Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific. As we begin our broadcast this morning, polling stations in Solomon Islands have just opened as the country begins its general election. Today, voters will decide their provincial and national MPs, which is the first step in deciding whether caretaker Prime Minister Songavale will see another term or if Solomon Islands will see new leadership. 300 candidates are contesting 50 seats in Parliament and another 900 are contesting provincial seats. Our reporter Evan Wasuka is at a polling station in Honiara and joins me now live. Good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Leo Aggie.
Look, I know it's quite early there. I'm just wondering, what does the voter turnout look like at the moment?
Aggie, it might be early, but people are out in droves to cast their vote. I was on my way here to where I am, which is in the White River polling station, which is on the west side of Honiara. I was driving here and I could see people just walking along the streets. I passed one polling station and there were people already crowded around outside. And here where I am standing at the front of the White River polling station, people are just clamoring to see their names and ID numbers so that they can go and cast their votes. There's a good line and people are slowly coming through. It's been raining for the past couple of days, but right now the skies are clear and people are trying to get through as much as they can, I think, before rains come.
Yeah, before the rain comes, again with the atmosphere, what have voters in Honiara had to say about today?
Yeah, so look, yesterday was really quiet. We had the big day of campaigning on Monday, where we saw lots of parades and floats. The campaign blackout period kicked in yesterday morning. It's been very, very quiet. But today, people are out coming down to vote. I'm here, like I was saying, at the White River polling station, which is part of the West Honiara constituency. Namson Tran is the incumbent here, but he's facing stiff competition from other contenders this year. Mr. Tran has held this constituency for the past three terms in Parliament, but we'll really see what happens when the voters come in and start casting their ballots. I talked to some voters earlier, and one of them was Walter, who said he was really keen to be here this morning. He was among the first people here, and he was very happy to get in line to cast his vote. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
Thank you. My name is Walter Nils. Right now, we here at the White River polling station. Yeah, and as we see, there are people who come here to vote for the new MPs to represent them in Parliament.
For you, why are you here and why is it important for you?
It is important for me to vote for my leader who will represent me and my future in Parliament.
And what type of leader are you hoping to choose, and what do you want to see come out of this voting day today?
I want to see a leader who have a vision to represent us in the Parliament for the next 4 years.
And do you have any message for other voters across the country that are listening in today, this morning?
Yeah, I do encourage the other voters to vote wisely and choose a leader who will help them for the next 4 years.
That's a voter, White River voter, Walter Neal. And Aggie, he was just encouraging other Solomon Islanders to come out and cast their votes, because here at White River, they're choosing their national MP and their provincial ward members. It's going to be a big day, and it's just a starting point here.
Absolutely. And so with that, how long are the polls actually going to be open for today, Evan?
Yes, so the polls started at 7 a.m. and they're going to run throughout the day until 4 p.m. this afternoon. What happens is, if you're still in line at 4 o'clock, the polling officials will allow you to continue to come to the front and cast your vote. So they won't turn people away, but they're urging people to come in early. Like I was saying, they're thinking the forecast is for rain at around 11 o'clock, so we'll probably see more people rushing in this morning to cast their ballots.
And during that time, while people are casting their ballots, we know that there's definitely a police presence everywhere. And Deputy Police Commissioner Wanita Matangi has said they are monitoring hotspots. Have we heard any messages from police in regards to today?
Look, in terms of police presence, there's certainly lots of police around. On my drive here this morning, I passed a convoy of more than a dozen police vehicles moving out into different parts of the capital. This included the police response unit and the other public order teams with the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force. Right here at the polling station, there's a bunch of police officers marching around the compound. And with a lot of the ballot, with a lot of the polling stations, they're placed near a police station. So just across the road from us is the White River Police Station. So certainly lots of presence of police around and security. So so far it's looking pretty good.
You are our eyes and ears there, Evan, so I'm just wondering, what can we expect to see across the rest of today?
Well, I think it'll be pretty much a similar story of what I'm seeing here at White River. I'm expecting that to be playing out across the country right now, because there are 334 candidates in total contesting 50 seats in Parliament. As you were saying, there's around 900 others also contesting the provincial seats. And if you look at the stats for this year's elections, around there's around 20 females contesting the election. But in terms of who is going to come out on top, it's really hard to say right now. All eyes are on Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare and how he does in the Choiseul constituency. But we won't actually know that until the results start to come out in probably 3 or 4 days' time.
It definitely is. It will be a wait and see. But Evan, we have to ask, have you already cast your vote?
No, I'm registered to vote in the East Honiara constituency, which is on the other side of town. So at some point today, I'm going to rush over and do my bit and cast my ballot. But right now, it's about updating you and everyone else listening here.
Awesome. Well, look, we wish you well, and we just appreciate always you coming through and updating us as to what is happening today. But again, Evan, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Aggie.
No worries. That, of course, is our reporter live in Honiara, Evan Wasuka, at a polling station there. Joining us live, we are carrying on our coverage here on Pacific Beat. Pacific Beat. Now, we just heard from our reporter, Evan Wasuka, about what's happening at polling stations. But today, as Solomon Islanders cast their votes, the big question is whether voters will stick with caretaker Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare or vote for change. Mr. Sogavare has made his political ties with China a key part of his campaign, but it's been pretty divisive, and voters say they'll be looking at issues like healthcare, jobs and the economy. Jordan Fennell with more.
It's being called the most important election in Solomon Islands history. Usually, general elections take place every 4 years, but today it will be 5 years since the last election after caretaker Prime Minister Sogavare controversially delayed the election until after the country hosted the Pacific Games. Since the last election in 2019, Solomon Islands has faced the COVID pandemic, a diplomatic switch from Taiwan to China, a controversial security pact with China, and political riots. So how will this impact today's vote? Manessa Sogavare is hoping to secure another term by highlighting his political ties with China as a big part of his campaign, a look north strategy that he says is pivotal for the country. The director of the Lowy Institute's Pacific Islands program, Dr. Meg Keane, told the ABC that this campaign strategy has been divisive.
It divides the country, and you can see that in the campaigning. The opposition members are strong about whether that was the right decision and certainly questioning the security agreement.
She says what will be front of mind for voters today are domestic issues.
At the ballot box, elections are won and lost on local issues, not on geopolitics. So he's really got to make the argument that that arrangement is translating into jobs, into services. And at the moment, you know, the biggest issue on the election agenda is the lack of health services for the people, expensive transport, rising cost of living, and the need for jobs for the youth. 70% of that population are young people that need far better economic prospects.
Issues like the country's crumbling healthcare system are particularly important to voters. At the country's largest healthcare facility, patients have reported waiting up to 3 days for a bed. Honiara local Maria told the ABC's The Pacific Show it's a struggle.
In terms of health, this is what we get, and it's really sad because maybe for those with money, they could afford to go to hospitals overseas. Meanwhile, for majority of us, we're stuck here. People should choose their leaders, the next members wisely. Because, like, even if we choose the same people, like, we don't see any differences.
Many of the country's 700,000 people have travelled home to cast their votes. But the general population won't be voting directly for the Prime Minister. Voters cast their ballots for their local MPs. And as results come in, those elected MPs will gather to form political coalitions. Once the coalitions are decided, the MPs themselves will vote for who they think should be Prime Minister. Tussling for the top job is Manessa Sogavare, but he's got competition from opposition leader Matthew Wale, Peter Kenilioro Jr., and former Prime Minister Gordon Darcy-Lilo, who's attempting a return to politics. Dr. Meg Keane told the ABC she believes Sogavare has a 50-50 chance of being re-elected.
People are saying that he's the front runner, but frankly, a prime minister of Solomon Islands has never been consecutively elected. That's not since independence, so the odds are against him. We have no accurate polling, but frankly, the political system is very weak and declared alliances are not reliable.
And while today's votes will make or break which MPs are elected, we likely won't know who scores the top job for a few weeks.
It will take days to count and know who those 50 MPs are. And then they got to get to Honiara from the Outer Islands. That can take days. From the time of the election to the time of knowing who the Prime Minister was 2-3 weeks.
And that is Director of the Lowy Institute's Pacific Island Program, Dr. Meg Keane, ending that report.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
We continue our coverage of the elections there in the Solomon Islands. And as the Solomon Islanders line up to cast their ballots today, the issue of corruption is a concern for many voters. Solomon Islands Independent Commission Against Corruption has warned voters against taking bribes or being swayed by money politics. But as our reporter Chris Narita Almanuliong found out, the issue remains front of mind. She spoke with Professor for Social Sciences, David Giggio, from Solomon Islands National University, about his reflections on the role money plays and how he sees the election shaping up.
For the most part, corruption sort of evolves around funds from overseas, people taking in. But I think when it's when money comes in for a project and then it's put into the hands of a few people, rather than a committee that, you know, that look after and stuff. But I think it also speaks to money being something new. I mean, like, here's another thing that we talk about development and here and so on, which is really, I see, as modernization. And so people are still sort of like taken by the whole idea of having big business, a lot of money and stuff, so that even our big bosses would bend the rules and use that money towards their project. or another way corruption, you know, pops up is the one-top system that we have here. People who have access or have the power, access to funds, channel the funds to their one-tops, to their own families, and so forth. Yeah.
So, you know, coming back to what you mentioned, one-top system.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about one-top system and what it means in Solomon's context, and also just around the Pacific?
Yeah. One-top system is an old thing. It's sort of, when you think of it, it's a double-edged sword. You know, it's sharp both sides, that you can use it to good benefits, you know, but it also can be used to benefit just a few and stuff and so forth. So a good example is, like I mentioned earlier, funds coming in and someone who is responsible for the funds, so sort of rechannels those funds to their one-tops or friends, you know, they're not necessarily families. It could just be a business mate in town, and so you give the money to them, and they use it for their own purpose.
Yeah. And over the years, it brings back to my other question about, you know, having accountability institutions,
yeah,
and their role, yeah, in the governance system.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we do have. I mean, some very, like the Ombudsman's office. I mean, that's. But I think in many ways it's. I think also it boils down to the one-top system. In many ways, my observation is they don't really play up their responsibility roles. Yeah. And so somebody would do something wrong and they'll be taught. And, I mean, once in a while somebody gets caught and go to jail and stuff like that. But I think for the most part, accountability is there. But in many ways, it's sort of like lip service. Is there something to say that, oh, yeah, we do have those? I mean, but I think the execution of their responsibility is one thing that's, I think, in many ways needs to be sort of pumped up a bit. We have a lot of tightening up rope, so to speak, in Solomon Islands. Yeah.
What do you think? What needs to change to reduce corruption in the country?
It's a huge question. It's a big question. I think to reduce it, my first shot would be to put in people in leadership positions who have their heads sort of like screwed and right, you know. People who have dignity, respect for the common good, respect for people, and And here's an interesting scenario. When people were running for parliament, like campaigning, wonderful people, wonderful folks. I mean, you talk to them, and their heads are like, oh, I'm a lot of person, and so forth. But then, as soon as they got up there, something happened. I don't know whether it's money or whether it's power or whatever. But I think they lose sight of who they were as ordinary folks or business people. But I think that's what we need for corruption to be brought under control. I think we need people in parliament or leadership position who have, you know, a lot of ethics and morality, and you know, who have their vision sort of like straight, as we say in pidgin. Yeah, I think that's sort of like still missing.
And that is Solomon Islands National University Professor David Jagia speaking there with our reporter, Chris Narita Almanuliong, on the Solomon Islands election, which we will hear more from her and we will cross to her later in the show. So stick around to hear her live from a polling booth in Malaita Province.
For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that honours that tradition, allowing you to hear in-depth personal stories from sportspeople to farmers, artists to teachers, activists to entrepreneurs, with one thing in common: their Pacific heritage and a unique and incredible story to tell. Stories from the Pacific, Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat. Yes, you have been tuning in to a bit of coverage in regards to the elections there in Solomon Islands, but we will switch away from that and focus on a new story this morning where an Australian judge at the centre of a judicial crisis in Kiribati has had a partial victory in his legal bid to have a suspension from the country's High Court overturned. The country's president suspended Justice David Lambourne in 2022 and the government tried unsuccessfully to deport him. Mr. Lambourne is a long-time resident of Kiribati and is married to the leader of its opposition. Now, the High Court has ruled his suspension was valid but ordered he not be deported until Parliament decides his fate. So joining us with more details this morning is our reporter, Liam Fox. With that, I say good morning.
Good morning, Aggie.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. If you don't mind, I know this has been quite a saga. And take us back, though. How did we actually get here?
Well, as you mentioned, it sort of began in 2022 when the president, Tanes Mamau, for unspecified allegations of misbehaviour and inability to perform his functions, suspended David Lambourne. Before that, there had been a dispute over tenure. The president was of the view that judges should have three-year terms, essentially, while the judges believed that they should be judges for life, which is the tradition in other parts of the world. So that was the context. Then we had the suspension of David Lambourne for these unspecified reasons. The president also set up a tribunal to investigate these allegations. And then the government tried to deport him from the country. There was a very dramatic standoff at the airport while the pilot of the Fiji Airways plane at the time refused to take Mr. Lambourne on against his will. The government eventually backed down on that, and that standoff was resolved with Mr. Lambourne staying in the country. He then went to the Court of Appeal, which ruled that his deportation, or the attempted deportation rather, was unconstitutional. And then things got even more dramatic when the government responded to that court ruling by suspending the three judges in the Court of Appeal. They were three retired judges from New Zealand. They were now also suspended, and that's left the country without normally functioning superior courts. This latest ruling that we're going to talk about has been made not by a judge, but by a commissioner sitting in the High Court.
Wow. So, well, then what has the court had to say about this?
Well, as you mentioned, it could be described as a partial victory for Mr. Lambourne. The High Court has found that the suspension notice given to him is valid. The president does have the power to suspend a justice, a judge. The court found that the appointment of the tribunal is valid, the tribunal that's going to investigate these allegations and make findings. Though the court did find that the withholding of Mr. Lambourne's salary was unconstitutional. He's been living without a visa and without a salary since 2022, his suspension. The court found that is unconstitutional and ordered that he be paid all the money owed to him from the time of his suspension. It said that while he may be suspended, he is still a judge. He can't perform his duties, but he is still a judge. The court also found that the authorities are within their rights to withhold a visa because that suspension is valid. But importantly for Mr. Lambourne, who, as you mentioned, is a long-term resident of Kiribati, he is entitled to stay in Kiribati for as long as the question of his removal is pending. And that will be sorted out by the parliament. Essentially, the tribunal will investigate. Then those findings will be presented to Parliament, and it will be up to Parliament to decide what happens next. So, according to the High Court, Mr. Lambourne can stay in Kiribati while this process is seen through.
Interesting enough, Liam, I'm wondering, has Mr. Lambourne even commented on the court's ruling?
Not as of yet. We've contacted Mr. Lambourne. He is considering whether to appeal the decision, weighing his options at this point, and declined to make a comment. There is, however, more of this to play out, as we mentioned. If the tribunal gets underway, starts investigating, then it will present its findings to Parliament. But he has confirmed he is still in Kiribati and he will remain there until this process is seen out.
Nice. Liam, nice work. Thank you very much for updating us on that story.
My pleasure.
No worries. That, of course, is our reporter, Liam Fox, right here on Pacific Beat.
Are you wanting to break your betel nut addiction, Zumba your way to a fitter you, or get on top of that excruciating case of gout? Pacific Pulse on ABC Radio Australia has you covered. Pacific Pulse seeks out experts, movers and shakers, and aunties and uncles from across our region to bust open our health issues, challenge taboos, and separate fact from fiction. Join host Melissa Macon on Pacific Pulse Wednesday at 6 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Malo Lele and welcome back to Pacific Beat. I'm your host, Egi Tupou. We turn our attention to a bit of sport now. The wait is over at last and the Flying Fijians have a new head coach. Mick Byrne will step down from his role with the Fiji Drua at the end of the current Super Rugby season and take charge of the national men's team. Meanwhile, the Fiji Rugby Union's interim board is close to completing its work after spending months sifting through the FRU's finances. They say they are set to be readmitted to the World Rugby Council, and the Flying Fijians are on the brink of being confirmed as one of the teams in the new Nations Championship, which will see them compete against the world's leading sides. There's been speculation that the FRU were at loggerheads with the Fijian government over the choice of national coach, but interim chairman Peter Maisie says it was red tape that held things up, and they have chosen Mick Byrne because he was the best candidate.
That's exactly it. He's already proven that he can work with Fijian rugby players and get the best out of them. And he has the experience, the international experience. He's very acceptable globally. Mick's been, you know, getting his plans in place for quite some time, and we were hoping that this would happen.
Sure. So can I ask, what was the problem that led it to taking several months before this appointment could be made? Because I understand and that there were issues over the visa that he required. And I think in the statement that the FRU has put out, it was clear that was quite an involved process.
It was. I mean, I don't know why everybody thinks it's something in Fiji alone, but if any Fijian applies for a visa, a work permit in Australia or New Zealand, it takes years sometimes. And it is a process that takes some time.
It was suggested that there was a bit of a battle going on between yourselves and the government over choice of coach, and that perhaps you didn't see eye to eye on that. I mean, did that have anything to do with the problem?
No, there was no battle. Government didn't get involved in the choice at all. That was just media hype. There's a process that they had to go through, and so we respected that process and just put in all the documentation they required. And yesterday they approved it and gave us the work permit.
And as part of the process here, World Rugby has been involved. I mean, how much of a say did they have in the choice of Mick Byrne as coach?
World Rugby had a say in to make sure that we got the best possible coach. And then all the people we interviewed, the majority of them required work permits. So we had to do that exercise.
And as part of this process, again, reading the statement that you put out, it would appear that Fiji are not confirmed to be members of the new nations competition involving Tier 1 nations, but very close to being confirmed. Am I interpreting that correctly?
You are, yes. We're hoping that at the May meeting or June meetings, May or July meetings of World Rugby, will be readmitted. We are complying with everything that was required. And remember, as was in that statement, there was a different, separate document between Fiji government and World Rugby and the National Olympic Committee that was signed back in last year, but due to government having to step in over the legality of the registration of Fiji Rugby Union. And that had to be complied with also, which called for World Rugby having a say in ensuring we got the right person in the position.
So with all those boxes ticked, as it were, I mean, come 2026, it's now more than likely, is it, that we'll see Fiji competing alongside the Six Nations from Europe, the Sanzar teams from this part of the world, Japan?
Oh, we're very much praying so, yes. And we're working very hard to get that in place. We're having new constitutions written, a governance structure put in place, And this is constantly under the guidelines. World Rugby have appointed a committee that we report to every month. So they're just making sure we cross the T's and dot the I's.
So the role for yourself and fellow members of the interim board of trustees is almost done?
We hope so, yeah. It has been a hard road, and the trustees have had to work very long hours in sorting out a whole lot of problems, not just the ones that have been identified by government, but problems that we discovered on our way through. And we have addressed most of those. And next month, we'll be going back to all our unions. We're taking a new constitution out for them to review and for their input into it. And hopefully, we can then go to an AGM in late June, beginning of July.
So a bit of a red letter day for the FRU then, by the sound of it.
Oh, it's very good, yes. We were very pleased to get over this. It was a long hurdle, a lot longer than we ever realised. But then we do keep forgetting how long it takes to get a work permit anywhere. And that we were reminded of.
And that is Peter Maisey, Interim Chairman of the Fiji Rugby Union. He was talking to Richard Hewitt there. Returning to Solomon Islands, where thousands of Solomon Islanders will be asked to make their choice today on who will lead the country. Coming up, we'll go to Malaita Province to hear from Krisnarita Almanuleong. But now, earlier this morning, our reporter in Honiara, Evan Wasuka, spoke with the country's chief electoral officer, Jasper Anisi. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, everything is going on well. From what I see, people are coming out very early to cast their vote. So it's a positive sign for today that people are coming to cast their votes.
And for you, you were among the first to cast your vote. How did you feel finally getting to April 17th and the vote being cast?
Yes, I feel like I've done my duty to cast my papers, especially exercising my democratic right.
Mr. Anisi, in terms of the rollout of the elections today, it had been raining the last couple of days. Are there any challenges to today's election?
Yeah, I think if the weather is not favorable, there will be challenges faced, especially in terms of the ballot papers, the materials that we're using. Most of them are not waterproof. So, some of the polling stations are in very remote places, which you need to cross rivers, and flooding can happen. So those are the kind of challenges that we face every time with this kind of big operations.
So far, there's some rain forecasted for around mid-morning. We're seeing people coming out to vote right now. Is that a good sign?
Yeah, I think it's a good sign because we've made the call and asked people to come out early and cast their votes because you don't want to wait until 4 o'clock and then you start to come to the polling station. So but the good thing is if they all come during the day, then it will be a quick turnaround for the polling officers to pack up and then retrieve the boxes back to the counting centres.
In terms of security, how is that shaping up for today? I can see lots of police presence around. Is that the same story in other polling stations and across the country?
Yes, that is correct. I think the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force is also supporting us, and they are making their presence known in every place over the country. Thank you.
And Mr. Anisi, final words, any message to the public who are listening in and who haven't headed down to their polling station to cast their votes yet?
Please, fellow Solomon Islanders who are eligible voters, come out and exercise your democratic right to vote for your leaders.
And that was Jasper Anisi, the Solomon Islands Chief Electoral Officer. Now, polling stations in Solomon Islands have been open for roughly about 45 minutes and already lines have been forming as people prepare to vote. We're crossing now to Malaita Province, where our reporter Krisnarita Almanuleong is. With that, I say good fellow morning.
Good fellow morning, Aggie.
Oh, Chrissy, what's it like at your polling station?
Well, Aggie, the rain earlier had dampened a lot of spirits, but now it's clearing up here in Malaita. And people are flocking in numbers out to different polling stations. Right in front of me, I can see outboard motors that are filled to capacity, even dugout canoes or with people traveling to their different polling stations here across the constituency. But it's a great excitement as well, great time for many Solomon Islanders. Those here that I've spoken to have been waiting for this day to happen, even though rain or shine, they are off to cast their ballot papers today. And for our constituency itself, there's no road access. So as you can imagine, people here are walking to the polling station. Some have to cross rivers, like the chief electoral officer has mentioned earlier, cross rivers to get to their different polling stations. But all that will take place today before polling stations close at 4 p.m. And hopefully I'll get to do that as well.
Absolutely. And I believe you had to cross the rivers this morning to get to Malaita. What was that like?
In fact, I had to go on the boat to the polling station because my polling station is right next to the sea. So I've had to go by boat. Unfortunately, I've not been able to do that, because I have to come back for this cross, as you can imagine, the connectivity issues around here. But I'm hoping to do that later on. But I can see a lot of people paddling and making their way to their different polling stations here in Malaita itself.
Mm. Chrissy, have you been able to sort of speak to a few people? How are people feeling today?
Well, I managed to speak to a few, and they're really excited about today. In fact, some of them have left around 4 a.m., I guess, before Aggie, you even started work. People were making their way to the different polling stations to be able to make their votes counted. But here in Malaita province, it's one of the most populous islands out of the 9 provinces in Solomon Islands. There are 14 constituencies, which means that 14 members of parliament from the 50 members of parliament will come from Malaita itself. So many people are looking forward to the polls today. On top of that, there are more than 128,000 registered voters here in Malaita, and more than half of them, Aggie, are young people between the age of 18 to 35.
Wow.
So voters are turning up, and we can expect a lot to happen as the day plays out.
Progresses, yeah, of course. With that 128,000 people, you're saying that a lot of that was youth. Have you been able to speak to any of them? Have they spoken about any of the issues they are hoping their leaders will concentrate on?
Yes, most of the issues that are coming from people here, they want the basic access to proper infrastructures, meaning roads. As I mentioned earlier, we don't have a road here from where I am. And so people want access to markets, access to the different services that are out in the provincial centres. People here also want better quality schools that are in the constituency for them. Also access to a health centre that is fully stocked with medications. So some of the basic necessities of the people here, those are some of the concerns that young people and even the elderly share from this constituency here in Malaita.
Mm. I had also seen on Facebook that there was, you know, a website encouraging people to go on there and to you know, access those services. Do you feel like people have been able to be a little bit more tech savvy in understanding what to do in voting today?
Well, that would probably be the case for other constituencies that have access to internet and even to proper network services, that they're able to receive text messages from the Electoral Commission or the different services that are being provided. Here, from where I'm from, where I'm reporting live from, there are no internet connectivity because is an issue here, at times patchy network. So I've had to also bring a satellite disk to be able to connect to you as far as Melbourne, to be able to come live across from here. So with all that, people are just mostly going around getting information from the different camps, from the candidates who are here in the constituency. Many have just heard from people they've asked about how to vote and all that. So in terms of awareness, it's still quite low around this part because it's, as you can imagine, it's quite remote and still inaccessible from the different information that's put out there.
Mm, wondering what the conversations have been like, though, Chrissy, amongst the community there. Do you feel like there may be a change in leadership?
Well, people are calling for change. People want change. But how that would look like, it all come down to them. And given this day, it will be the day that it's not about the politicians. It's not about the candidates. It's about the people. leading the change that they want, leading the steering that to the direction that they want and see best for this country. And it'll be an exciting day today as we'll update you more as the polling day happens.
Well, that's it. Yeah, what can we expect to see across the rest of today there in Malaita?
Well, we can expect Solomon Islanders to come out to exercise their democratic rights. It's been a while since they've done that, or, you know, over 4 years. So we can expect a lot of people to be queuing up, a lot of people to be moving around the different parts of Solomon Islands itself to cast their vote, be it on board, be it on road, or walking. They'll be. We've had a high turnout of voters in the previous elections in 2019. People are exercising their rights, and we can expect that to also happen today. Hopefully the weather permits, but either way, Aggie, everyone's out to vote.
And for yourself, Chrissy, of course, I have to ask, what does it mean for you, though, to be able to go out today and vote too?
Well, I got up this morning pretty early to put on my best clothing on, because it's a real pride for me as a Solomon Islander to be able to go out today as remote as I can to vote for the person that I think will lead our constituency and our country. And it really is an honor for me to do that as a Solomon Islander. And hopefully things will go in the direction that not only myself, but many Solomon Islanders expect.
Chrissy, thank you so much for your time. I do know it is a big day for yourself and for your community and the people there of Solomon Islands. We really appreciate the work that you're doing. So, take it to us. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aggie.
No worries. That is our reporter, Christarita Almanuleong, speaking to us from the Solomon Islands general election.
Pacific Beat.
Well, back to, of course, the elections in Solomon Islands. We have those who are keeping a close eye on the result of this year's national elections. They are human rights advocates. Rodney King-Mille, he says an overwhelming majority in favour of the incumbent government could spell problems for democracy in the country. But Mr. King-Mille says this would all depend on the composition of the government.
My sense is that if the ruling or our party, which comprised the ruling government in the former parliament, if they retain at least the same number of members that they had in the last parliament and maybe more, then that would be when, you know, alarm bells might start ringing, because, you know, they might start pushing the envelope, as it were, pushing the boundaries to see how far they can get away with some of their pronouncements. The former government has always said that, you know, democracy is about the majority rule, and so they pushed through various amendments in the last parliament based on the fact that they had the number to push the amendments through. So if they come back with the same or a larger number of members, then, you know, they might continue where they left off, and that might be a slippery slope down somewhere that the country doesn't want to be. But having said that, there's an appetite for change within the general population, and if the results of the election means that not as many of the former government come back in, that might sort of put some brakes on this trend.
In other words, a narrow majority might actually be a brake or a handbrake on some of these tendencies, which are never going to carry Solomon Islands to straight-out autocracy, but could erode its strong democratic principles.
That's correct, yes. If it's a narrow majority, then that would put a brake on these trends.
Why is this so important? Because it's a distinction between democratic principles and majoritarian rule, as you're putting it. Why is that distinction so important?
It's to me, it's important because you know, a government which has you know, 40 or more members in parliament could use that under the guise of democratic principles to push through the agenda, which might not necessarily be democratic ideals or democratic changes to the law.
What's your message, or your organisation's message, about the importance of these principles, no matter who cobbles together a government in the next term?
I think the message is that even if the ruling party has the numbers, it should, when pushing through amendments, look at what's good for the nation as a whole, and not necessarily just pushing through amendments just for the sake, just because they have the numbers. So I think that's an important point that needs to be made.
And that is Rodney King-Mele, Chair of the Transparency in Solomon Islands. Time to take a look back at our main story today. Polling stations in Solomon Islands have officially opened this morning as the country begins its general election. Our reporter Evan Wasuka is in Honiara.
I passed one polling station and there were people already crowded around outside. And here where I am standing at the front of the White River polling station, people are just clamoring to see their names and ID numbers so that they can go and cast their votes.
And that is our reporter Evan Wasuka live in Honiara. Look, I'll be back at same time tomorrow at 6 a.m. PNG time, but you can tune in again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. Stay tuned to all your news that is up after ABC Australia with our news, and then coming up after that, it is Nisha Daily. Until next time, otua o whaato. I'm Aggie Dubow, and this is Pacific Beat.